Welcome to this very special live edition of the Making Sense podcast, surviving the economic storm, real strategies from New Zealand's top economists. There has been a lot happening lately, and it could have a really big impact on your money. Inflation, otherwise known as the cost of living, prices are up, and they're up in the core areas where you really feel it, like power prices and food. Meanwhile, interest rates, they are going down, good for the mortgage, sure, but also impacts jobs, your KiwiSaver. So we are going to unpack what is going on, and also very importantly, what you can do about it. We don't want to be walking away feeling hopeless and helpless, so it's all going to be really actionable as much as we can. This is going to be the information that matters for your life. What's going on with prices, cost of living, interest rates, what that means for mortgages, investments, your job, it's all on the list and we're going to deal with it. Now, before we get into it, really important, it is disclaimer time. You know the drill. It's important. This is not and cannot be individual financial advice. Everything we talk about here is general information. And from there, you will need to adapt it to your own individual financial situation. If you are looking for someone to give you individual financial advice, financial advisor is always the best bet. So, with that said, it's time to introduce our fantastic panel. Forgive me here, I am a producer as well as host. So, here we go. First up, we have the wonderful Shamabeel Jacob, who has written several books about the economy. He's all through the media, giving insights and analysis, and of course, currently chief economist at Simplicity. He makes the economy simple for the rest of us. We very much thank him for that. Welcome, Shamabeel. Next up, Dan Brunskill. Now, this is a former colleague who I very much enjoyed working with, these days economics and politics reporter at interest.co.nz. Highly recommend his reporting if you want to know not just what is happening, but also that context, the why. Last but never least, if I can bring him up here. Here we go. Miles Workman. He is a senior economist for ANZ. Also previously worked for Treasury. So once again, strong politics, economics combo. Thank you all so much for coming today. Talk us through these issues. I'm always thrilled when we get a really strong panel like this. So a brilliant mix. Thank you all for taking the time. Now, as we get going, don't forget to hit subscribe to Making Sense. If you have to step away, the workday calls, that's fine. The replay will be here up on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. So hit subscribe, come back to it if you need to. But until then as well, make the most of the time that we do have together live. You can drop your questions into the chat and you can also say which of the areas that I've mentioned so far are most on your mind at the moment. Because if we know that that's a really big area of concern for a lot of people, we can maybe spend a bit more time there. So keep the conversation going and have a chat to us. But let's dive into it for now. Look, this first question, I'm going to scoot around all of you. There's a lot happening in the economy right now. What is the number one thing that you're keeping an eye on? Let's start with you, Shamabeel.
Well, the number one thing that I'm looking at is what's going on with jobs. I think that's the biggest connection people have with the economy. If you don't feel confident about getting a job, moving jobs, getting a wage increase, especially in the current climate of rising cost of living, I think it gives people real pause for thought when it comes to whether I'm going to go out and spend, whether I'm going to invest, when I'm going to do that big thing that I want to do. So that's probably the thing that I'm watching the most. And the reason why I'm watching it is because we've had some job losses. We've had quite a lot of businesses hanging on to people in recent years, but it feels like there's a bit of a risk that we're going to see a bit more job losses in the coming months. So I'm kind of looking at that really closely. And the big indicator I look at is job ads. Because if businesses are starting to advertise for vacancies, then hopefully it's a sign that things are getting better. And there we're starting to see just a little bit of a beginning of a recovery, but very uneven across New Zealand.
Yeah, it's tricky that, isn't it? Because so much of our data is given to us on quite a lag. We're always looking at this so much from the past. So we do have more jobs data coming out in November. And the idea is, and I'd love to know your thoughts on this, that probably the unemployment rate is going to be going up. That's going to be based on older data, but you're looking at things like the job ads. Is that slightly fresher data? Like, how do we balance those?
Yeah, I mean, I literally call up the people in Trade Me and ask them what's going on. And so you can get a daily kind of look at what's going on. So it is possible to get some of those indicators that are much more frequent. And so, you know, with the economy, there is no one big measure that tells you the truth. We're always triangulating based on lots of information. Some of it's quite old, some of it's quite fresh, but you're really trying to get a sense of, given what we see, what's the kind of holistic picture? Right now, I think the story is that it's just been a really tough winter. I think there's just no denying it. And we're starting to see some signs that some of those very negative things are bottoming out. But I don't think we're yet seeing that kind of strong recovery that's well knitted together, spread through the economy yet. But you know, I travel around the country a lot, going down south in New Zealand. Things feel pretty good down there. Canterbury is doing really well. Otago, there's a lot of positivity. Across the middle of North Island, not so much.
Okay, some really interesting things there for us to dive into as we keep talking. Dan, what about yourself? What's the number one thing that you're keeping an eye on at the moment?
I tend to worry about the things that other people are not. So I guess the thing that I'm slightly nervous about is inflation risks. I don't particularly like to see inflation at 3%. I know everyone who does economic modeling is very confident that it will come down. But as someone that can't see the economic models, I just see inflation going up, and that makes me a little bit nervous. The other thing I'm worried about is sort of a longer term problem, is the risk that we are potentially losing productive capacity during this recession, and that when we do accelerate back to full speed, that full speed will be lower than it used to be. And I sort of worry about that and hope we're doing what we can to stop that being the case. So those are kind of the two things that I'm sort of thinking about and worried about, rationally or not.
Yeah, and I think that the inflation point is a really important one that I agree with you. When you talk about the productive capacity, can you give me a plain English description of what that means and why that might be a worry?
Yeah, I guess the productive capacity of an economy is how much stuff can you produce and things can you do without causing inflation. So if you have a factory shut down or a bunch of workers move overseas, suddenly you can produce less without causing inflation. So the sort of the maximum economic activity of our economy might be smaller today than it was before the recession, because we've had some factories close down, some businesses shut down, some workers move overseas, which means when we accelerate back to full economic growth, that full economic growth might be a bit slower than it otherwise would have been.
Yeah, I've got to say, I feel like everyone I know is heading overseas at the moment, and it's a bit of a concern. As much as I love that for them individually, I would love to see some of our productive workers staying in New Zealand and feeling like they have opportunities. Miles, what about you? Number one thing you're keeping an eye on at the moment?
Yeah, so from where I stand as a bank economist, we're constantly trying to calibrate the efficacy of monetary policy. So we know that the Reserve Bank has delivered substantial monetary easing. But what we haven't seen as of yet is a material reaction to that in the broader economy. And you may be familiar with the term long and variable lags. That's essentially a bank economist and reserve banker speak for, look, we changed the OCR, but every economic cycle is different and it does take time to filter through the economy. So with that lens, I'm always looking for the green shoots. And look, we have been burnt as forecasters over the past year or so, expecting to see green shoots that just haven't materialized. And I sit in the dealing room, so we get hassled sometimes that the green shoots have become brown shoots, and that just isn't really a big economic response to the amount of monetary easing that's already taken place. So with that in mind, I'm always looking for the first things that you can expect to react. And look, fair enough. The high frequency data, so PMIs, PSIs, some business survey data, consumers, they're not feeling too upbeat at the moment either. It's all still pretty soft. But just last week, I was doing a bit of a analysis on Google Trends. And sure enough, home renovation, building a new deck, getting new carpet, those types of things, they are starting to rise. So there is a little bit of tentative evidence here that the green shoots are just around the corner. And hopefully what that means is we'll get that typical transition. So you start with economic activity. Once that picks up, you start to get a bit more confidence from firms to hire and invest. So then you start to see it in the jobs market, and then you get this recovery that we've all been talking about for quite some time. So look, it does look like that is happening. But yes, that the green shoots, I would say, are still looking pretty fragile.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. In terms of the headlines we see around, because of course the headlines are something that can have a really big impact on not only what's going on, it can, you know, influence what people do. It can also very much influence how people feel, which once again influences what they do. So is there anything around at the moment that has been hitting the headlines that you think maybe is being overplayed, or it could run the risk of being misinterpreted? Shamabil, how about you?
No, I don't think so. Like, in terms of the gloom, I think it is entirely justified because people don't feel so good in terms of how much money they have left at the end of the week. So the pressures that people are experiencing, I think, are real. The same with businesses. Business profits are under pressure. They don't know when their customers are going to come. And all those things, I think, are fairly realistic. I think there is a temptation to say, oh, you know, we're talking ourselves down into this recession. Well, where did the talk start from? There must have been a beginning somewhere. So I think, you know, yes, media and the stories that we tell ourselves, those are amplifiers, but they reflect what people are experiencing. We can become too obsessed with it in terms of not everybody is actually affected by the recession. So even in the current recession, not everybody is doing it tough. In fact, many people are doing it okay. But looking at the ANZ Morgan Consumer Confidence Survey, I think it was about 45% of households who are saying that they're doing worse off financially than a year ago. That's a fairly big chunk of New Zealanders. But there's also, like, I don't know, I can't remember the exact number, like 50% or somebody who are actually doing okay. So you kind of have to have that little bit of the distribution of understanding that not everybody is affected in the same way. But look, I don't think we should kind of assume that it's about finger pointing, that somehow it's an imagined mythical thing. It's not. There is really poverty in New Zealand. There is real hardship in New Zealand. But it's also true there are many people who are doing okay. So it's more the general trends and the direction of the economy right now is very much that recessionary one, where there is a lot of fear, there is a lot of sitting on hands, and there's also that very real effect, that very concentrated effect of people losing their jobs, some businesses that are closing. Those are also very real, but the very extreme things that we tend to see. But I think sometimes those extremes are not applicable to everybody, and just keeping that in context can be quite helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, what about you? I mean, I certainly know the pressure when you're the one writing the headlines to try and sum something up in a sentence and not be misleading. Is there anything where you look at it and you're thinking we're running a bit of a risk here of misleading or misinterpreting?
Yeah. I mean, I'm professionally obligated to say all the headlines are 100% correct and accurate. Nothing misleading, no sensationalization. I do think Shamabil's onto something there. We're in terms of I think journalists generally reflect earnestly what they're hearing and seeing and experiencing from even if it is in a slightly in a bubble or whatever. And I think the negativity you see does reflect some economic weakness. There are a couple of economic statistics which I think are somewhat misleading, which is I think that the unemployment rate looks deceptively low. I think the labor market is a bit weaker than you might think if you just looked at a graph of unemployment rate over the last 30 years. And the other thing that I think, which is a bit counterintuitive maybe, but I think house prices are still deceptively high. I think people really anchored house prices to that 2021 peak, and they still think about it in terms of when is my house going to go back to that peak. And I think that that is a trap. And sometimes we in the media sort of say, oh, when will house prices recover? Whereas I think house prices are probably recovered. This is probably like the house price level going forward, and will increase a little bit every year or whatever. But we're not in a temporary house price dip. We sort of had this weird anomaly peak, and now we're back to normal. It's not the other way around. Those are the two figures that I think people should maybe like look at a little bit more closely.
Yeah, I think, Dan, you're absolutely right on the unemployment statistics. I mean, we can see that in terms of the job losses have been far less severe than the reduction in hours. So, you know, we've seen really big pullback in full-time work, you know, the number of overtime that people do. So the actual FT effect has been much bigger. So you're absolutely correct that every recession is a bit different. Miles was talking about that. And in this recession has been weird in that we haven't seen the same kind of job losses, but the impact on households has actually been quite severe. because they haven't had the income, but it's been spread in a slightly different way. But I feel a little bit more optimistic as a result of that for the recovery, because people still have jobs. So, you know, to your point, Dan, that, you know, if we had all these job losses, the scarring effect can be quite bad. So when you want to recover, you don't have the people to hire, you don't have the people to do the work. But relatively speaking, compared to previous recessions, we have more people who are on hand and ready to work by just increasing hours rather than having to rehire them, retrain them, and all those other bits and pieces. But, you know, the concern for me is that you're absolutely right. Sometimes we're kind of looking backwards and kind of going, is this like the GFC? No, it's not. The entire context is different. I mean, there is a war that's going on in Ukraine. You know, we've got this crazy person in charge in America. You know, we've got, economic policies and politics that's just, you know, completely unpredictable at the moment. And to somehow kind of use our heuristics and our kind of lessons of past cycles to try and implement that out to today just doesn't feel right. And, you know, I think, you know, when Miles was saying that we've been getting our forecasts wrong, we always get them wrong. It's just a question of, you know, it's not just a question of timing. We also tend to get the direction wrong. So I think, you know, we just need to be really mindful that when it comes to economic forecasting, we're essentially in this period of change and everything is unpredictable. And that's why it matters so much for people to get access to good information, not about this kind of point estimates of forecasts or, you know, this overconfident predictions of, oh, I think in March the economy will recover and you'll have more jobs. Well, you can't rely on that. You know, all the experience of the last couple of years is we just don't know.
Well, I think you both make a really strong point on the jobs there. And we were going to talk about that a bit later, but let's jump into it now, if that's what's come up. Because we see the unemployment rate at 5.2%, which is high, or at least it's been higher. And yet the underutilization rate, that's what you were mentioning before, Dan, and Shamabil, that people who would like more work, and they technically have some work, but not as much as they want. Maybe they're part-time, they really need it to be full-time, they can't pay all their bills, or they're contracting, and they've got some contracts, but not enough. And that's what we call underutilization, and that is much higher. It is particularly high for those 20 to 24, and I think that's really, really hard on people who are just coming into the workforce. Shamabil, is there anything you see that would move the needle on jobs, business confidence, whatever we're needing in this area?
Look, I mean, it's the usual prescription in terms of how do you get the economy going again. So really what we have seen in the last year or so is businesses saying that we are hopeful that things will get better in the future, but right now things are not so good. And if you don't see the evidence of that hope turning into reality, you're not going to do something. And the question is who blinks first and what causes the blinking to happen? Is it going to be lower interest rates? As Miles said, those lower interest rates haven't really flown through yet. Is it going to be fiscal policy? Well, fiscal policy hasn't really been giving a lending hand. Is it going to be global stuff? Actually, the global stuff has been a bit of a helping hand. So if you look at very high commodity prices, the performance of some of our commodity exports, that is lifting up many of our provincial economies. And that's why, for example, we're seeing job ads increasing in the provinces and not in the cities. So we're starting to see some of those benefits coming through, but I think it's really hard to sit here right now and go, we have monetary policy and fiscal policy, the two big levers that are actually really delivering those returns in terms of people's willingness to go out and take some risk, spend some money. Right now, we're still seeing a lot of caution. And I think a lot of that is to do with the fact that the cost of necessity is just going up so much. People are, you know, that spare income is being consumed really quickly. Electricity rates, insurance, food. I mean, every time I go to the supermarket, you go, what did I get for all that money in my basket?
I think a really important point to add on top of what Shamabil just said is the agricultural sector is certainly the bright spot in the New Zealand economy, but it can't drive sustainable expansion. It's too small, essentially, as a share of total economic activity to drive our overall business cycle. So right now, it's definitely provided a helping hand as the economy's kind of started to hopefully find a floor. But ultimately, until you get a bit of momentum injected into the household sector, you don't really get a sustainable recovery. And that's the big challenge here for policymakers, particularly the Reserve Bank, because they want to engineer a recovery, but they don't want that recovery to be so strong that it starts to threaten inflation pressures to the upside once again. So the Reserve Bank's really walking a tightrope. They've got a lot of probably recalibration to do over the forecast horizon as they get a better feel for how these OCR cuts are actually continuing to flow through.
Well, really good point on that, Miles. And I mean, is there anything that can be done, whether it's by policymakers, whether it's by the individual person? You know, jobs are so important for people. What can be done at whatever level here?
I think the good news is we've done the hard yards in terms of, well, fingers crossed, we've done the hard yards. And what I mean by that is we've the economy has gone through the pain that the Reserve Bank intentionally inflicted on it, because the post-COVID response was just too much stimulus for the economic conditions. And to basically knock inflation on the head, the governor of the Reserve Bank essentially said, we are going to induce a recession. So the hard yards have, fingers crossed, been achieved. And now it's a case of getting the economy back on its feet. It does take time. And because of the high cost pressures or the high cost environment that many households are facing, I think it's fair to assume that the household sector, the recovery that we are going to see, it is going to be gradual. You could even characterize it perhaps as a bit of a grumpy recovery, in the sense that it's just not going to feel great. I mean, slower inflation doesn't mean prices are falling, right? It means the pace of price rises is just slower than what it was yesterday. So if you think about affordability of goods and services, it's a pretty slow burn story, right? Because you've got stable and relatively low growth in consumer prices, and you've got this income catch-up story. So what really matters for households is their purchasing power. If the goods and services prices are stable and low, but we're still expecting this sort of gradual recovery in household incomes, look, that ratio correction, it's just going to take a bit of time. So I think what we are in for is a cautious and a bit of a recovery that for many households isn't going to feel very boom-like, if that makes sense.
I mean, Dan, inflation and cost of living coming up a lot here, and I think it is really top of mind. It's a really big factor in this discussion. Inflation technically is sort of at the top end of manageable, and yet it's really hitting those core categories that people can't avoid paying for. It's hitting things like the power prices was a big one I saw, of course, food, housing. Rates and insurance have been ones that have come up a lot. It's the type of categories that you can't avoid paying for where it's coming up the most. And it's the stuff that you can avoid where it is not hitting as hard. I mean, are there any sort of actions that people can be taking either at an individual level, or is there things that the government should be doing? What would we like to see to pull the lever in this area?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Inflation was 2.979%. The limit of the target is 3%, just in case you're wondering how close to the top of the target it is.
Yeah, inflation is a tough one.
One thing I think about, this is not necessarily very helpful other than in terms of like a mindset. I don't want to be too much of a Pollyanna, but inflation is supposed to reflect the basket of goods we buy, and it is only 3%. So while like essentials inflation is up 5%, in theory, at least, quite a lot of that cost increase is being offset by lower prices elsewhere. And I think it would maybe be slightly helpful if we can recognize where we are making those savings or seeing less cost increases, and then sort of mentally deducting that from your essentials, which we don't tend to do. You know, when you go to the supermarket, you don't think like, oh, this supermarket shop was expensive, but I got my iPhone a bit cheaper than expected. No one does that calculation in their heads. But that is what the CPI calculation is doing. I think, for example, for me is like, I didn't get a rent increase this year. My rent this year has been the same as last year. That might be the first time in my life that's ever happened. And that's saving me.
It should have fallen.
Yeah. And I have some friends who have negotiated rent reductions. And that goes a long way to helping with your grocery bill or your power bill if your rents aren't going up or God forbid, going down. So I reckon if you are a renter and your rent is coming up for renewal, ask for a reduction and just see if they take it, because people are getting that. It is happening. And people don't think to negotiate rent reductions because we haven't had them in our lifetimes. But we are currently in a sort of weak rental market, where if you go to your landlord and say, I don't want it to go up 5%, I want it to go down 5%, they might say yes. So I would give that a shot if I were looking to make some savings.
Dan, I think the issue with inflation is the high frequency stuff that you buy all the time. That's the bit that really influences your behavior, because that's what focuses your mind in terms of how you spend, how you consume. And I think that is the challenge. But also, I think the characteristic of the current inflation is not that the cost of electricity and rates and insurance and food is going up because we're consuming too much of it. It's because there are some other issues going on. In fact, inflation in those bits that are responsive to, I guess, the economic cycle are relatively low. And I think that's the good news here, is that that's why the Reserve Bank has cut interest rates, why they will cut interest rates again. To Mark's point, they wanted to engineer this recession, but I think it was deeper and longer than they expected. So certainly, if you look at the current economic cycle, this is deeper and longer than the GFC, and the projected recovery is shallower and longer than the GFC. So, you know, they've engineered a hell of a recession, and we are all paying the price of that. So, you know, the decisions that people are having to make in terms of their own kind of jobs, careers, incomes, and the fear of inflation, all those things are, I think, are in a slightly different setting. And I think Francis asked, you know, what can you do? I think the thing that we can do is the Reserve Bank cut interest rates more, because they went too far and too hard. And if they cut interest rates more, then it will give some stimulus for the borrowers, and particularly for people who are starting new businesses or making new investments. But the challenge, of course, is that all the savers, and we have more and more savers now, who are going to be hit really hard. And so it's not as easy as it used to be. I think the demographics, I think the way that people save, the way people behave, it's quite different from what it was during the GFC. And it's quite different from, I think, some of the mental models that we've used, that there's just an easy way to do things. I don't think there are any easy ways that are in front of us.
Yeah, agreed. And I see in the chat there's been quite a bit asking about inflation and jobs. So we're just going to stay here for a moment. But I also see some people asking about investments. So we are going to come to that very soon as well. So keep dropping in your comments, your questions. It means that I know which areas are most important to you, and we can lean into them while we've got this wonderful panel of experts here. Cherubil, I think as well, you know, you mentioned there about reducing interest rates, because we had the most recent interest rate cut, quite significant, even generating those headlines of calling it shock therapy, because it was that 0.5% interest rate cut. And then that does hopefully, as you say, do things like boost jobs, reduce costs for people, but could also send inflation and the cost of living and prices back up. So how does this balance out, do you think? Good news, bad news, a mix?
I think it's good news for borrowers. I think it's good news for the economy. It's bad news for savers. I'm less concerned about inflation, because the spiral that we're thinking about is, if we cut interest rates, suddenly there'll be so many jobs that people will be getting wage increases that are really, really high to compensate for them for the cost of living increases. That's simply not happening at the moment. I mean, I was talking to my neighbor who's a vet. He had a job ad and 600 applications for a receptionist. So, you know, it's Hunger Games out there when you're looking for jobs. Is anybody getting massive pay increases when they start a new job at the moment? Good luck. That is not where the inflationary pressures are in the economy. It's the lack of jobs, lack of inflation in wages that's actually reducing people's ability to spend. So it doesn't mean that there's no risks in the future. I think there are plenty of risks in the future. But right now, I'm not worried about inflation. What I'm worried about is businesses going bust, more people losing their jobs, and the scarring that we have avoided in the last little while, that becomes the reality. What we don't want is, you know, this kind of the stabilization that Miles talked about, this hopefully reaching the bottom. I don't want us to have another dip, because that would mean that it's an even worse recession than the global financial crisis. And the one that you have to look back to then is the reforms of the 1980s. Nobody wants a repeat of that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely agree on that. Miles, you must see any time there's an interest rate change. I mean, working at a bank, I'm sure this is then the number one thing that gets brought up, both professionally and I'm sure over the barbecues at weekends, because certainly my DMs then get flooded with, what should I do with the mortgage? You know, Dan made a great point earlier about you can negotiate lower rents at the moment. That is true. We are seeing that in the data where rental prices are falling. So great news for renters. What about the homeowners? What should they be thinking about with mortgages at the moment? Are we expecting interest rates to keep going down? How might this impact what people weigh up when it comes to their mortgage?
Great question. Yeah, I mean, we do get asked this a lot. It's basically our bread and butter, really, working as a bank economist. Look, the upshot here is the Reserve Bank is still being relatively cautious. So our forecast is for another 25 basis point cut in the November MPS, and then that's it, they're done. Provided that, of course, the economy responds as they expect. So we know the inflation data is responding as they've been anticipating, but we still need to see this pickup in activity that they've been forecasting. So look, I'd characterize the risk around the OCR outlook as being on both sides right now. I think you get that 25 basis point cut done in November, you signal to the market that you're willing to do more if you think you have to, and then you just see how the economy responds to that over that lengthy summer period, because the Reserve Bank don't meet again until February next year after they've done that November, after they've made that November decision. It's also important, though, to remember that it's not just the direct interest costs that change things in the economy. So yes, you've got households out there who are currently on a fixed mortgage and they're about to roll onto something lower. I've got a couple of numbers written down here. So about 38% of current fixed mortgages will roll over in the next 6 months, and about 73% of fixed mortgages will roll over in the next 12 months. So there's plenty of interest rate relief still in the pipeline, which will hopefully help this recovery. But there are other impacts as well. One of them is confidence. And part of the reason the Reserve Bank came out so aggressively, not just in October, but also in August, was really they wanted to backstop an economic recovery by signaling to all these people in our economy that, yes, we are going to get this recovery one way or the other. And if we have to cut in 50 basis point increments, so be it. So there's that confidence channel that I think they've really tried to ignite. So that's going to be a really interesting one to watch over the summer. And then lastly, I think the big one is the exchange rate. So we don't often think about this when we think about monetary policy, but when interest rates go down, the New Zealand dollar tends to follow. It's something that traders call the carry trade, interest rate differentials between New Zealand and the rest of the world. Look, when the dollar goes down, if it's under lower under downwards pressure, that's really good for our exporters. It increases the competitiveness in global markets and ultimately can lead to more investment and more employment in these exporting industries than otherwise. So it's not just about how much your debt costs, it's all these other channels as well. And the Reserve Bank has done a pretty good job of getting all of them primed, ready for a recovery. So I think that's something to bear in mind when we're thinking about the next 6 months or so.
What about you, Shamabil? Where do you see things going in terms of the interest rates, how that might impact mortgages? Also, you know, let's start with mortgages, but I'd like to know your thoughts on the property market, because these interest rates do have a huge impact on the overall property market. So first up, mortgages, second up, property overall. Thoughts?
Yeah, so with mortgage rates, the wholesale costs have already come down. And I guess the thing that I was hoping for was a bit more competition amongst banks to, I guess, chase customers. We haven't seen a lot of that. So the spread between swap rates, the wholesale costs and mortgages are still holding up at a relatively high level. So we haven't kind of seen that kind of, you know, real focus on getting the mortgages out to the community. So we're not seeing big volumes of new mortgages being written yet. There's a lot of refinancing and things going on, but people aren't borrowing yet. So in terms of mortgage rates, particularly fixed mortgages, there's probably a little bit of downside, a little bit further reductions to come in the next little while. My kind of personal feel is the Reserve Bank will have to cut again in February because they haven't done enough. They went too hard. They left interest rates too high for too long. They've caused a lot of damage to the economy. It's not going to turn around that quickly because the signals are just not going to come through. And the cost of living is just mopping up too much of the pressure on people on fixed incomes. Because only about a third of New Zealanders own their own homes with mortgages. So two-thirds of New Zealanders are not getting the benefit of this interest rate cuts. So the impact on the property market, I think, is very much around whether you think people will be confident enough to go out and get mortgages to buy something, which they probably will because we have a national obsession with housing. But the challenge is if you want to do it for an investment property right now, it's really challenging maths, right? You're not confident about the outlook for capital gains and the rental yields are not looking very good. And getting your place rented is a lot harder than it used to be even a couple of years ago. So things are, I think, a little bit more challenging in the property market. But my sense is that if I look at the numbers from Ryan's, for example, in terms of the number of houses that are selling, have been recovering from that low during the high interest rate period, but it's kind of fizzled out in the last few months again. So the confidence is still very on and off. And you know, when it comes to the property market, I've always gotten the forecast wrong. So, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I'm going to be able to get this right. But what I'm hearing from talking to real estate agents that are in my neighborhood is properties are taking a long time to sell. You know, and they're only selling when people are willing to meet the market in terms of much lower prices. I think Dan mentioned this before. People are still thinking prices are as high as they were where interest rates were 2.5%. And so there is this almost unrealistic expectation. My house is worth $5 million or $2 million, and surely the market must meet me. But the market's not going to meet you. And so I think there is this kind of this impasse at the moment that Mexicans stand off. But it will clear at some point in time when the mortgages are more readily available, when the banks are out there competing for customers. We haven't quite seen that yet. So I know Miles can't talk to his bank's retail division, but I guess that's kind of what I'm really looking for the property market. We tend to see the strongest activity in the property market when banks are out there aggressively trying to lend money to people, because ultimately that's the thing that fuels our property cycle. That's the leverage multiplier.
All right. And of course, outside of property as well, Dan, I mean, interest rates are a little bit of the secret sauce that impacts all of the money world. You know, we look at it and we immediately get headlines on mortgages because, let's be honest, people who have a mortgage often buy newspapers as well. So it's a great way to shift things. It's very relevant to that audience. But it impacts absolutely everything. I mean, what do you think in terms of how it might impact the money world outside of the property, the mortgages? I mean, Kiwisaver jobs, whatever's on your mind.
Yeah, I like to say that if you grab a shovel and start digging anywhere in the economy, it won't be long before you hit an interest rate. They're sort of under everything. But yes, obviously, we do love our property market, and it has not gone anywhere recently. New Zealand stocks have also done very poorly. I don't think that's necessarily just about interest rates. It's we have a sort of idiosyncratic stock market. But investments more generally worldwide have been going, what the technical term is, bananas. I think the S&P 500 is up something like 95% in the past year. New Zealand stock market is up 7%. I don't know if that gap has ever been so wide in history. I've not gone and looked, but I would be surprised. Australian stocks are up sort of 45%. And I think it feels slightly contradictory in some ways, because we're talking about all this geopolitical uncertainty. And there's a recession risk in the US, and there's a recession here. And kind of the mood is super negative. But the stock market is just like straight up forever. Let's go. I think a lot of that relates to the sort of AI boom and the AI, both hype and the investment that comes with AI. People are very excited about AI transforming the world, but they're also building data centers and making investments and hiring people to build AI products. And that is actually stimulating a huge amount of activity in those markets that are investing in AI. So there's kind of this split screen view where stock markets are doing pretty good in most parts of the world, except for New Zealand, where it's been terrible. But sort of the economies around them are sort of looking a bit more fragile, and that sort of activity is not equally shared across all sectors. It's sort of, there's this handful of sectors that are booming and a bunch of other sectors that are sort of floundering and treading water. So it's one of those things where if you're an index fund, it's sort of going up and it's great. But if you went and chose a bunch of investments, well, you may have chose well, you may have chose poorly. There's sort of a wide range of possible outcomes. On the New Zealand stock market, when the Reserve Bank did do its 50 basis point rate cut the other day, you did watch the stock market that day bounce straight up. I think it was 0.5% or 2%. I can't remember the exact number now, but you saw an immediate reaction on the stock market. So definitely the shock therapy in that regard did work at least a little bit for the day.
Yeah, exactly. And another shout out for index funds. Look, I just love them so much. And here we go again. While we're talking AI, actually, and this is entirely unplanned, you may or may not have a view on this, but do you have thoughts, Dan, on whether there is a bubble right now in AI? I know opinions differ.
I mean, it depends on your definition of the bubble. I mean, we're definitely in a bubble. Is it going to pop and cause a financial crisis? Maybe not. I'm not so sure. I definitely think there's too much hype around AI, and that it's going to be quite hard to... What you hear from businesses is like they get an AI tool and they're like, cool, this is awesome. We really like using it. It's improved our productivity slightly, but we're not quite sure how to integrate it. And we're really interested to see what it looks like in 3 to 5 years. And then you hear Sam Altman sort of be like, oh, we need a universal basic income tomorrow because I'm about to replace every job in the entire universe. And the gap between those two things is quite wide. So I talk to people all the time who use AI. My dentist used AI, but my appointment was the same length as it always was. She just like felt a little bit more confident, could just make a few decisions a little bit quicker. She said it was a useful communication tool with her customers because it like highlights some problems in my teeth or whatever. It's like, I think that the gains are real and useful, but to me, it currently feels more like the internet than, I don't know, the steam engine.
Yes, I love that so much. You're absolutely smashing the analogies today, Dan. It's really good. Shamavil, as you know, you're working at Simplicity. You, I'm sure, talk about this all the time as a KiwiSaver provider. So when we've got all of these things happening, things like the conservative KiwiSavers, they are focused more on term deposits, cash. Those interest rates have such a huge impact there. Then we've got the stock market going bananas. And that is, you know, impacting those growth or aggressive funds. I mean, what do you think? Do you see opportunities at the moment for those who do have a solid job, who maybe aren't in debt? Are there opportunities with money at the moment?
Yeah, great question. So at Simplicity, of course, we are what you call fairly hands-off. We try and mimic the market, right? It's more like an index fund rather than an active manager. And I guess the reason for that is I can't be confident if there is a bubble and when it might pop. So if you can't do that, then what's your strategy? So our strategy at Simplicity is very much that if you can't time the market, it's time in the market that matters. So the opportunity, I think, is the same old boring secret sauce of investing. Start early, do it regularly, and don't look at it too much. And, you know, in my mind, that's the best way to save, because if you do the contributions regularly, the movements up and down in the market is far less important than that habit of saving over a long period of time. And when you choose those products, whatever they are, it's really important you choose them that are commensurate to your risk. Don't get FOMO. Don't do things because somebody else is doing it or the market's doing something. That's the stupidest thing anybody can do, right? Because then you make bad decisions. But also, I think it's really important for people who have good jobs, good incomes, if they have spare cash right now, is not only to rely on the KiwiSaver, which has become kind of the predominant way we talk about savings in New Zealand, is you should be saving in other things too. Because the reality is KiwiSavers at current rates are not sufficient for your retirement. You know, if you want to have a really nice, comfortable retirement, you might want to have other investments. So we've been seeing really record signups in our investment funds in the last few months. So we're seeing a lot of interest in people coming in, I think in part motivated by the very strong financial markets. But also what we're seeing is regular contributions. So that's the bit that gives me a lot of heart, that people aren't just chasing the returns. They're also kind of realizing that there is this real benefit to the habit of saving, which I know, Francis, you talk about all the time. And so to me, it's kind of like finding that balance right of, yes, of course, you should get the risk settings right. Make sure you get the right fund that's commensurate to your risk profile, your personal situation. But after that, I think it really should be as much of the set and forget as you can.
100% you are, as you predicted, absolutely speaking my language there. Look, on these last couple, I'm going to whip around all of you on this. So I think we'll start with you, Miles, but Dan, Shamavil, I'll get your thoughts on this too. Something the average person could be doing, bearing in mind we are all different, but what is something you think the average person could be looking at to protect their financial situation in this type of environment, Miles?
Look, I think the main thing is understanding where we are in the business cycle and why. I think for anybody trying to get their head around the economy, it's this big, complex beast, which is not always easy to understand. But I think a good framework is to think about it from two lenses. The first is the cyclical lens. Where are we in the business cycle? And what's the Reserve Bank trying to do about that and why? So the answer to that question is we're hopefully near the lull and the Reserve Bank wants to engineer a recovery, get us back onto a path towards full employment. That's good news. But the second lens is the structural lens. And this is sort of the long run, big potential issues that are bubbling away that the Reserve Bank can't really do anything about. This is more of the role for the government and fiscal policy. And these are things like an aging population. What does that mean to the composition? What does it mean for the composition of the economy? AI is another thing you can put into the structural category. What does it mean, and when's that going to impact? Is it going to completely change the nature of work, or is it just a bit overblown? I mean, these are questions that, to be perfectly honest, economists couldn't give you a straight answer right now. All they can really do is talk about the risks on both sides of the equation. So look, I think the main thing here that I'm really trying to say to keep my answer short is really trying to get your head around both where we are in a cyclical sense, but also being aware of some of these structural issues that could blow up at any point down the path there.
Yeah, great points. Dan, what do you think? For the average person, what can they be doing to protect their financial situation in the current environment?
I think one thing that's helpful is recognizing that things have changed and that the old models aren't necessarily going to work in this new era. And in this, I'm particularly thinking about housing. I'm not discouraging anyone from buying a house if that's what they want to do. But the default of that being the default investment that everyone should make to secure financial security, I'm not so sure about that anymore. And I think you should be thinking quite hard about what is the best way to maximize my financial security and returns. And is it necessarily going out and buying a house? That's one thing that I want people to think a little bit more about. Owning a house has lots of great non-financial benefits. So you might want to own a house for non-financial reasons. But just in terms of as an investment, I think a closer look would be good. And then the other thing I want to say to young people in particular is that it is worth saving and the future is going to happen. Quite often people say to me, I don't really think my prospects are that good, so I'm not going to save, and climate change is bad anyway. And there's some real negativity. And I think things are bad, but the future's still going to come, and you can make things as good for yourself as possible. You may as well do that. Even if you think the future might be bad, it's still worth trying to make it as good for yourself as you can. So don't give up.
I am so with you on that. I do think there's almost I was talking about this the other day, doom content does very well on the internet, and you can really get pulled into this doom spiral just because that stuff goes viral, gets shared, and yes, things can be bad out there, but we've gone through bad things before, and tomorrow tends to keep turning up. And I think that's a really good point. Shamabil, average person, what can they do to protect their financial situation, current environment?
Yeah, look, I think it's about really translating what it means for you. And I think through three things. One is around, are you maximizing income? Have you got, the best possible job given your qualifications and life circumstances? Are you getting all those entitlements like accommodation supplement or perks at work? Just make sure you're maximizing your income. The second thing is around having a really good budget and a really good understanding of your costs, where you're spending your money, whether you're doing it intentionally and deliberately, I think is really helpful, particularly in the current environment where there is a lot of big costs going up. And also making sure you do a bit of shopping around and switching utilities or insurance companies and those kinds of things, you can unlock some quite good savings if you do look around and make some good calls. And the third thing is really around saving. To echo Dan's point, saving is really, really helpful and important. The earlier you start, the more regularly you do it, the better off you will be and more choices you will have. And when it comes to savings, I think there are some pretty big catalysts for people to think about their savings at the moment. Term deposits are right now quite difficult things to have as your savings products because you're not going to get the sufficient returns when it comes to beating inflation. So getting good financial advice to make sure that you're investing in the right kind of products, right kind of risk profile is really, really important. So those three things, I think, yes, all this stuff can feel very negative. Economic cycles happen. But the thing that I think you really want to focus on is, have you maximized your income? Do you understand where you're spending your money? Have you made the best choices there? And if you have the capacity, please save regularly. That's the habit that'll set you up.
100%. I remember I've seen this research pop up in a few different places over the years. And there is this really strong theme that actually the number one thing you can do to reduce money stress, and this works whether you earn a little bit or a lot, is saving regularly. There are a stunning number of people on big incomes who don't save regularly, and it causes them huge money stress because they know it's a house of cards. There's actually also a number of people who can be on lower incomes, manage to save, and it makes their life so much less stressful. So I think that is a really important point. On the topic of this, one of the things that does get discussed is the sort of the feelings behind the economics, behind the numbers, that you can actually, as a country, talk yourself into recession if you feel bruised, if there is a lack of confidence, people just don't take the actions that are needed to help the economy pick back up. So The last thing I think is we're going to get into our feelings. Do we have any tips on ways to stay confident or areas to look at that should genuinely make us feel more confident? Dan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, it's funny. The advice we just gave everyone about save money for your own financial security is like the worst advice we could give for the economy. What we should be saying at a macroeconomic level is like, don't save, get your money, spend it, spend it, spend it. That's why the COVID recovery was so strong. I don't know if you remember this, because we all like had this idea that it was our civic duty to go and spend all of our money. And we did, and we had like crazy inflation. So I don't know, if you want to fix the economy, go spend your money, don't save it. Yeah, in terms of the feelings, I do think about this a lot in the media, obviously, because we write about it, and anything I write, well, it's less so now, but for a while, anything I wrote with a recession in the headline get twice as many reads. So that obviously the temptation is to put recession in the headline so that, you know, you get the reads. I do think that we talked a lot about green shoots, and then the green shoots didn't come, but I think we really must be in the green shoots phase now. I do think things will get better. There is a certain amount that, like, if you expect things, I'm generally an optimist because I think you can expect things will get better and then they do, great. Or you can expect things will get better and they don't, but at least you didn't feel downhearted at the start. So I do think just sort of to the extent you can assume things are going to get better and plan for it. It would be my advice, I guess. And don't, you know, the media by design reports on negative, bad things so that you know about them and can respond to them. We don't really need to write a story that says life continues as normal. So like, don't focus too much on like negativity in the media. It's always going to be slightly negative. Negative headlines doesn't mean the economy is turning to shit. It just means that there are like some things you need to think about and worry about and know about. And there they are. But then like, look in your real life and see all the good things. Yeah, that's kind of, the good things are in your real life. The bad things are in the news.
I love, what's the old saying about, you know, getting the newspaper and flip it straight to the back, which is where all the sports pages are, of course, because the front page covers man's failures and the back page covers man's achievements. And I must say, as someone who has never been a sports fiend, I'm getting more and more into sports for exactly that. It is a bit more fun. Miles, get into your feelings for us, or at least help us get into our feelings. Things to help us feel confident.
Yeah, look, I don't want to sound like I've completely drunk the Kool-Aid here, but I think the upshot is monetary policy works, right? We know it works. And it might take longer to work sometimes than others, but it does work. So we know that. That's factually true. The other thing that's factually true is the Reserve Bank is trying to engineer a recovery. Put those two things together, and the fact that monetary policy is a repeat game. They get a go at setting interest rates every 6 weeks. And if the data evolves on the weaker side, they'll just do more. Likewise, if it evolves on the stronger side, they might do a bit less. But what we can really say is, step back, big picture here is, look, the Reserve Bank wants a recovery. They're going to get one. And it's just a matter of time. So look, I think that's something that we can be a little bit optimistic about. And of course, with a lot of these headlines, I agree with Dan there, is you do get more negative headlines, I think, than positive or neutral. And there is always a risk that we talk ourselves into a deeper downturn than necessary. I think the Q2 GDP data was case in point there. The headline figure, negative 0.9, 0.4 of that was quirky seasonality. I think if you look at 2025 for the first half, the economy probably didn't contract. It probably just went sideways, and there's volatility in our GDP data is the upshot. So look, things aren't as bad as they may appear for some. And of course, the Reserve Bank wants a recovery. They're going to get it.
All right. Shamaviel, last words from you. Things to help us feel confident.
Well, I think it's a reminder about why we would go to work and why we engage in economic activity. I don't think we turn up to work because we all enjoy our work as much as economists do. I think the reason why we go to work is because we want to have leisure time. We want to have time with our family, friends, and nature. And I think, you know, for me, that's always a constant reminder. When you do those things, even in bad economic times, you realize there's still a lot of good in life. And that'll be my invitation for you to think about, what is it that drives you and motivates you to go to work and do those economic activities? More often than not, it's not the economic stuff, it's the human stuff. Hold on to that, and that will make you feel a hell of a lot better.
What a beautiful note to leave it on. Thank you so much. All right. Well, that is us entirely out of time. In fact, a little bit over what I promised our panel we would do here. So thank you all so much for taking the time to talk to us. Don't forget to hit subscribe to the Making Sense podcast, Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, so that you keep getting the inside word on what's going on with your money and the tactics that you need to best be looking after it. But of course, big thank you to the panel, Shamabel Jacob, Dan Brunskill, Miles Workman. Really appreciate those insights. So valuable. Until next time, guys, have a great rest of your day. Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.